one of the lights off?
I think it's fine like that. Probably work first.
So what we're doing here tonight is helping our board, bringing them along with what the laws say. What is the framework within which they work to approve, disapprove a charter, understand the charter. And so what we'd like to do tonight here is move right along. So again, what is a charter school? I think there is a misconception out there that it's a private school. It's somehow this entity that's separate from the public school system. It is not. It is a public school. It's exempted. I'm not sure I like the word most education code provisions, but it certainly is exempted from many education code provisions. Some things that they aren't exempted from, API and AYP, they are not exempt from testing structures, and they are not exempt from accountability measures. That is built into Ed Code, and so the charters are required to adhere to those measures, to assess their students, to report out, and to be measured by the state of California. Some areas that where you'll find that the Ed Code doesn't apply, one area being personnel. There's much more flexibility, and they talked a little bit about that tonight. I thought you did a good job at one point here, where there is flexibility in how you hire, how you release. Employees by Ed Code as it pertains to charter schools are at-will employers. And that's a completely different structure than traditional public school employees. We hire by a date certain. A contract lasts for a year. And schools then are only allowed by statute to release employees on March 15th. Not so if the charter school sticks with the provisions in Ed Code. They can move employees at will, and that gives them tremendous flexibility over a traditional school system. I point that out not because that's the most that's the biggest difference, but it gives you that point of distinction between how they operate. A great deal. I think probably the biggest word, and correct me if I'm wrong, charter school folks, flexibility is key. It's key in how you operate, and the laws are written such a way so that happens. A great many things are identical to traditional public schools, non-sectarian, can't charge tuition, cannot discriminate. They fall under the umbrella of the California Constitution. All children are to have access to free public education. The legislative intent, what was it behind all this? Just a real fast preview. This helped us to give a framework. The legislative intent was to improve pupil learning, to increase learning opportunities for all, with a special emphasis on low-achieving students. If you go back and look at the original documents, the original arguments that were presented, you'll find that the emphasis was for those strata of students who didn't seem to be performing well, a flexible approach, a different approach could possibly work for low-achieving students. And so that was a focus there originally. They have found that some charter schools are excellent at what they do and help all students. We found that some charter schools aren't excellent at what they do, and they do not positively affect any of the students in their schools. It all depends who runs them, the level of motivation, and the focus on academic rigor. It's to create new professional opportunities for teachers, no question about it. If you have flexible, creative systems, it allows you to work into a venue that's different. Expand choice within the public school system. Heard about that tonight. Hold charters accountable for meeting pupil outcomes. That is a legislative intent. Finally, to provide vigorous competitive competition to stimulate continual improvement. That's from the original language when the arguments were presented. Vigorous competition was really what the state wanted to see. So today's agenda, what is the charter petition review process? I aim this primarily at you board members to just give you a framework. We'll give you the PowerPoint presentation. I know you'll study that, and we're going to learn what are the dimensions of approving or disallowing a charter. Well, what to look for. Has to contain all the requirements. We start with signatures. We learned about this a little earlier tonight. I know you've seen some of those documents. There is an Ed Code provision, 47605. If you're a charter school person, you're very, very familiar with that section. And that really sets the stage for how charter schools work and the review process for the board. You have a copy, by the way, board members, of that particular section of California Education Code. Describes additional information that has to be submitted with the charter. Contains provisions related to facilities, admissions, state standards, consultations with parents and teachers. And then we get down to this piece here, this last one. Reasonably comprehensive descriptions of 16 educational elements. Okay. We're going to talk about that. What is in that? I've given you a copy of what those 16 standards are. I just want to mention them for the public record. The 16 standards is found in Education Code R, a description of the education program, measurable pupil outcomes, method for assessing pupil progress, governance structure of the school, employee qualifications, health and safety procedures, means to achieve racial ethnic balance, admission requirements, if applicable, that's a special area. There's the charter criteria, student suspension and expulsion procedures. There's flexibility and disciplinary measures for charter schools that do not exist for traditional public schools. Staff coverage by STRS, PERS, or Social Security. They are required to address those issues. Public school attendance alternatives. School employee leave, return rights, dispute resolution process, declaration regarding labor relations under the Employee Relations Act, and finally, procedures for closure of school. The reason I share these just publicly with you, those are the 16 criteria. Now, you'll notice there is nothing in there that says you must examine finances. In fact, it's omitted in Education Code. They did not make that one of the criteria. So the way the state has set this up is if this were to cost a district $100,000, $200,000, $300,000, $500,000, whatever it was, that would be money that would leave the district, go to a charter, by statute, you are not allowed to include that in your evaluation process in terms of whether or not you would approve the charter. The charter petition review process, this is where we're at. We're beginning it now. And so it describes as applicable among the different elements how the charter school will, one, how are they going to improve student learning? Has to be specific. Can't be general. Can't be boilerplate. Has to be specific. How will we improve learning? Increase learning opportunities for pupils, particularly how pupils have been identified as academically low achieving. How do we get at that? Do we identify them? Do we work with that? Do we have means for working through that particular issue? Provide parents, guardians, and pupils with expanded educational opportunities. What are they? Must be specifically stated. Holds itself accountable for measurable performance-based pupil outcomes. Charter schools are held to the same standard as traditional public schools. We must have measurable assessment pieces in there. They must be evaluated. They're applied to the school. And as I said before, they are subject to API AYP evaluation by the state and federal government. Provide vigorous competition with all other public school options available to parents, guardians, and students. We've talked about that already. Information regarding proposed operation and potential effects of school. As you evaluate this application, this proposal, this is another area you'll start to move through. We'll give you additional information as we go along to make sure that you're comfortable with the concepts. Facilities be used. Provision of administrative services. How will the school be administered? Who will administer it? What's the structure there? Potential civil liability effects. This is an area we're looking at as MCUSD. If you choose to be the sponsoring district, you have oversight responsibilities for that charter. With that comes liability exposure. And so we have to be very clear on what that relationship looks like. We have to be very clear on how the charter school will operate in terms of liability exposure. Propose first-year budget and 3 years of financial projections, including cash flow. Cash flow is really important in the state of California. Those of you who are real close to us know that cash flow is a particularly vexing issue. The state issues a budget, and then they withhold the funding, so you don't have the cash in the bank for the budget that's been produced by the state of California. So if you have an $11 million budget, it may turn out you only have $1 million in cash. And so the state, by withholding that money, makes it exceedingly difficult for schools to operate. Charter schools are subject to the same cash flow issues. So why is this important? AB 1200, I know you're very familiar with that board. That's your three-year, multi-year projections. These schools are subject to that. They have to show you the operational cost for the current year and working out 2 years for a three-year span. So the fiscal piece is critically important. Second area, petition denial standards and process. Here's the areas, I think someone alluded to this earlier. You would deny this based on an unsound education program.
The regs in the education code doesn't really motor into this area and give you specifics. There's no bright line written in ed code what an unsound versus what a sound educational program is. Petitioners are demonstrably unlikely to successfully implement program. This would be in the case, maybe you would see a charter in another area, certainly not in Cathy's Valley, where you have halfway motivated individuals, folks who haven't followed through. You have reason to believe they can't implement carry through to the end of the race. Signatures are insufficient. Signatures have to be verified. Signatures have to show that they've met the threshold. 50% of those who are intending to attend that school must sign up. You have also, if they propose to have, say, four teachers teach there, you need to have two teachers say, yeah, I support the charter. So there's what we call the 50% rule there. So my office is currently working through their documents and looking at all the signatures. That's part of our process to make sure that we've documented that and that particular element meets statute. Lack of affirmations, this isn't really going to be applicable for us here. Lacks reasonably comprehensive descriptions of required elements. Now, you can notice in this, the word reasonably comes up over and over and over again. Very difficult to put a real clear definition on what reasonable is. So what we attempt to do is take a look and get a baseline. What is a reasonably powerful school in the state of California? What is a reasonable application of curriculum? How do schools reasonably teach to the standards? How do they reasonably assess? That's the standard you use. If MCUSD denies the petition, typically the petitioner would appeal to the County Board of Education. We're very unique. As you know, we're one of only five counties in the state of California where we service both the County Office of Education and the district, the school district. So if you were to deny, legal counsel has told us it would probably bypass. It's not been tested in court. The County Unified District has not had this test in court, so it would be pretty interesting if that were to happen, just for him, if you're a lawyer and we're wondering how the courts might play this out, probably bypass the County Office of Education, go straight to SBE for possible authorization. District oversight. If you approve the charter, we are charged with district oversight. The state gives you 1% of the budget of the charter. It would allocate 1% for you to provide oversight. If the charter had a $300,000 budget, we would receive $3,000 to provide all the oversight over their program. That would be fiscal oversight, personnel oversight, credential oversight, those types of things. Charter school must respond to reasonable inquiries of the district. As you know, we go through P1, P2, we end the year, we have to get reports to CBE, we have to have our unaudited actuals to the boards or to CBE at certain times, we have to close out our books before June 30th, prepare the new budget, have that ready to roll on the 1st of July for the next successive fiscal year. Charter would be subject to that. They have to work cooperatively with you, get that data to you in a timely manner, and not hold up the show. And that's true all throughout the state of California, just not this charter. Charter school must respond, okay, to the reasonable inquiries of the district. So that's what I mean there. So anytime you have, I guess I would say, a mandate, a law, a reg, a requirement, it has a deadline, a timeline, you've got to meet it, work cooperatively with the sponsoring district. District could be liable for debts or errors of charter school if oversight responsibilities are not met. So, in this particular case, if a mistake was made, say on the fiscal side, and we were found to have made an error and didn't provide the type of due diligence in some type of fiscal area, the district is ultimately held responsible, the sponsoring district. So with oversight comes the responsibility, the heavy lifting of understanding you're ultimately responsible. The
there's two cycles running simultaneously. You have had a charter presented to you. You've had a facilities or a Prop 39 application presented to you. Prop 39, there's an 80 ADA trigger that pops this thing up. And what happens is if the school shows that it has an ADA of 80 or greater, Prop 39 is an application that can be filled out by the charter school. And what it does is it's a different structure of offering a facility to a charter. Okay. In this particular case, for this charter, there's 101 students who have shared an intent to enroll into Cathy's Valley Charter. And so with that, because they have 101 intent to roll on the onset of this, their school isn't operating, they couldn't possibly have ADA. So for that first year, you look at the intent to enroll, and that's what triggers Prop 39. So they have given us an application to use Prop 39 for the facilities. And what that does basically is the business department right now is determining the square footage in our entire district. We divide the square footage by the total number of students that attend our district. We then find the cost of running our schools, apply that to each student, and get a cost per square foot per student in Mariposa County Unified. It is that cost per square foot per student that's applied to the use of the facilities for the charter. If they don't meet 80 ADA, the difference would be they would negotiate with us. If you approve the charter, they would then negotiate with us on some type of price structure.
Now, since Cathy's Valley has been closed, are we required to bring the school up to the American Disabilities Act before they can occupy the school?
We have that question in right now and to our attorneys. Since we've owned the property, even though it's closed, we're still the owners. We believe everything that there is still grandfathered in, but we're waiting for a legal opinion, and it's a real good question. Along the same lines under Prop 39, since the school has been closed, if you were to approve the Prop 39 application, if you approve the charter, Mariposa County Unified, according to statutes, is responsible for reopening that school, making the classrooms look comparable to any other classroom in the school district, bearing the cost for that, and opening it up in turnkey fashion for the charter. It's the way, that's just the way the statutes are written. How does Prop 39 work? This is operating on a monthly cycle. Your charter has a 60-day timeline. They submit the charter to you. You have 60 days to evaluate, deny, approve, accept, whatever the case may be. Prop 39 works a little differently. We're evaluating the information they've given us. By December 1st, the charter will hear from my office if we object to anything in that particular application, or if we think, no, it looks really good. We respond back to the charter by December 1st. If we objected to it, the charter would then respond back to us by January 2nd. If we didn't believe that the answers were completely remedied, we would respond back to them by February 1st, and this works its way out to May 1st. So it's a monthly calendar that operates, and they've set it up in such a way so that both parties can work back and forth through a negotiated process to arrive at a solution by a date certain on May 1st. Charter school must be operating in the district. So if you file a Prop 39, they couldn't be operating outside of our district. They'd have to be operating within our district. By the way, the reason you are evaluating the both the Prop 39 application and the charter is by statute, we are the LEA in which this group resides. And so by statute, you are required to analyze it and render a decision within 60 days. We talked about operating means 80 ADA. By the way, that's in-district ADA. Those are students in Mariposa County. So let's say, arbitrarily speaking, let's say they had 90 ADA and 50 were in-district and 30 were out-of-district. Prop 39 wouldn't apply. It would have to be 80 ADA in-district or greater. Special ed considerations. their school falls under the same requirements for special ed. All special ed students have to be served by an IEP. The IEP has to be fully met. FAPE has to be applied. And we are the LEA that provides special ed, so we would provide special ed service to the charter school. The one caveat here is that the charter school would pay their pro rata share for the encroachment. So if there was a certain percentage of encroachment of special ed on the general fund, they contribute to that. But really, the LEA in this case, Mariposa County Unified, we would be responsible for working cooperatively with them and providing all the special education services.
So Aaron, say that the IEP said that there need to be transportation provided. How would the charter deal with that, or how would we deal with
it? We would be responsible to pay and provide transportation.
Would we get any kind of reimbursement or no?
No.
No. Okay.
Not by statute.
Okay.
It is possible the charter, though, could say, hey, you know, we want to...
The charter school would be... I'm sorry. Just to clarify, the charter school is responsible for those transportation services as part of the district, the fees that they pay back to the district as part of the...
Is that 1% to 3%? Is that what you're saying?
No. Special ed funding is...
Funding is separate. Okay.
That's only on the encroachment pro rata share, though, correct?
Yes. The transportation fees is specifically covered by charter schools.
For special ed.
It's required by the IEP.
Including special ed.
Yeah.
The charters, just like traditional public schools, can't deny students. It's a form of discrimination. Children with disabilities must be fully served by any public school in the state of California, and rightfully so. Provisions just like traditional, a one-size-fits-all approach doesn't work. The IEP has to be met. There's individual circumstances. Those individual circumstances must be addressed. There's two options for the charter schools and here. And as we start to move through this, Joe Borges will work very closely with you and supply you additional information as we move along. But operate as the local agency and local education agency for purposes of special ed, and operate as a public school of the LEA for the granted charter. And summing it up, again, this includes the students who reside in other school district boundaries. So if students come to the charter and they're outside of our school district boundaries, they come into the charter, they're on an IEP, they require special services. Charter is required to serve them, and we're required to operate with them, even though those children wouldn't reside in Mariposa County. Again, this you can't deny the charter based on the potential cost of serving children with exceptional needs, and solely because the charter might enroll pupils with disabilities who reside in a different SELPA, can't deny them there either. So let's say they came up from Merced, belonged to the SELPA that services Merced, but wanted to attend this charter. We're all obligated to serve those kids. And again, rightfully so, the special ed students have those provisions. Chartering entities, of course, are required to supervise and monitor the special ed program, and that is everything from the identification piece all the way through staffing, making sure that all the provisions of the IEP are met, holding IEP meetings, that would be annual, triannual, and contracts with third parties in the cases where a third-party contract is required. That's the quick overview. You have all of this in your packet in front of you. And so you'll want to definitely read through that, and we want to work with you so you feel more and more comfortable with what's there.
So back to the special ed, the IEP. So is the district responsible for overseeing the IEP of the charter school?
At the district works in cooperation with the charter.
So during an IEP, do we need a district representative there?
You know, I'm not sure that. Joe's not here, our special ed director.
They could be, myself would be invited to the IEP meeting and work with the charter in terms of, especially if they're looking at possibly student either county program, so then we look at bringing them into our county program and things like that. But generally, you work with the charter in terms of invited to the meeting. Our speech would go to charter school and provide services, or OT and things like that. So it's just a collaborative kind of ongoing thing that you work. Just no different than if I work with one of our other schools. Really, no, really different there.
So if there's disciplinary actions, an expulsion or something, and their IEP that meets as a district, we have to be involved in
the map that they determination. Yes, we would have to fight college as much as
SARB
that.
Hearing or do they even do SARB hearings? I mean,
well, that's a good question. I don't know too much about the actual SARB hearing, but definitely the manifestation determination. So if a student is up for expulsion or something for a 10-day timeline, then we would, our psychologist would do the report, and then we'd be at night, we have a manifestation determination, and then go forth based on that recommendation. I don't know how the extent of, I'm familiar with how, I would assume it would be the same way as how we run the district in terms of both the expulsion hearing board.
That's my understanding, Joe.
So we look at
this hearing board then?
Yes. That'd be on the county side, remember, that'd be your county office function.
So we would have to approve the expulsion?
No. No, it'd be their school board.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's in the charter, and the suspension is the expulsion section. Currently, the charter has no appeal process. There's no district involvement. It's up to the charter school board. You are not involved.
So, but the way
I
the
think
charter
what they're saying is that if you had a child who was expelled in the county and was no longer in a school, as the county board of education, they'd have an obligation to put the child in the school because it's illegal for a minor not to be in school.
Well, sure, any child who's under the public school age mandate, yes, that's still a child of the county, and the county would be responsible, of course, for their education.
So, just reading I read your charter about the expulsion. So, with the expulsion, if there's an expulsion, the child's expelled, and the charter school just expels the child and turns their back on them, you're on your merry way. Find your own education.
Not find your own education. You're back under whatever district.
So now it becomes the responsibility of the county
just
to
like
educate
them. Sure, yeah. Just like any other child that would be expelled from any other district.
The district would be involved in the manifestation
for special ed.
On the preparation of financial documents, do you fill those out? Do you do all of that? Then it comes to our financial office, and we check your work, and then it all goes up to Sacramento? Is that how that works? Or do you fee for service our people to do your paperwork?
Well, it's the former. We have actually budgeted in our budget a considerable amount of third-party support for preparing our financial documents and complying, but it's not using your resources to do them.
So you would hire an outside agency to come and help you with your documents?
That's correct.
Okay.
I have a question, Joe. Do you think we should set up an order of asking questions so that we can each get some time? Because I could monopolize the whole evening for the rest of the night, and that's not fair. So I wondered if maybe each board member could have a certain amount of time to ask questions.
Sure.
And work our way
You're welcome to go first.
Oh, well.
I yield my time to you.
What the heck?
I have a public comment time as well, because I would like to clarify a couple points the superintendent made.
Let's do that first.
Okay.
So I just wonder if I could go to the podium and put something down.
Can you introduce yourself?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you. My name is Michelle Roskowski. I'm from the Law Office of Middleton Young and Mitty. We're based out of Sacramento. We represent over half the charter schools in the state. Have been in this business since the Charter Schools Act was first passed in 1982. I just wanted to clarify, thank you for the presentation. I don't often see that for boards, so it's very helpful, I think, for the audience and for the board.
Well, they've never been exposed to any of that.
Well, and it's tremendously helpful then. I just wanted to clarify a couple of points that you made, especially the district oversight role. I think that may have sounded a little scary for the liability aspect for the district. In fact, the charter school is incorporated as a nonprofit, and under law, Ed Code Section 47604C as in CAT. I'll read it for you because it's very important. An authority that grants a charter to a charter school, which would be your board, to be with the charter school to be operated by or as a nonprofit public benefit corporation is not liable for the debts or obligations of the charter school or for any claims arising from the performance of acts, errors, or omissions by the charter school if the authority has complied with all oversight requirements by law, including but not limited to those required in section 47604.32 and subdivision M of 47605. So what that means is you need to perform your district oversight. The law, frankly, is very slim as far as what those requirements are. They're laid out in 47604.32, the duties of a chartering authority, and it's very minimal oversight requirements. You can go far and beyond those requirements and act as you do for all of your other district schools. But the minimum that you have to do is A, identify at least one staff member as a contact person for the charter school. B, visit each charter school at least annually. C, ensure that the charter school under its authority complies with all reports required of charter schools by law. So you're checking off the boxes to see that the charter school submitted its annual reports that are listed below.
To whom?
To the state. And to you. So the charter school is required to submit to you financial documents such as their budget, their yearly budget, their yearly audit by December 15th, a second interim financial report by March 15th, and finally their final unaudited report by September 15th. So those are the financial requirements. The last oversight responsibilities are monitoring the fiscal condition of each charter school under its authority. And that's important because a big power that chartering authorities, boards such as yourself, have over charter schools is ensuring that they are managed well fiscally and that they meet the accountability promises that the charter has made in the charter document that you have in front of you. If the charter school does not meet those items, you have the power to revoke that charter. That's what the Charter Schools Act is all about. Offering all this flexibility, which you spoke of earlier, in exchange for the power to yank that charter and say, you're not doing this correctly, you're not serving our kids well. And you revoke that charter, and the charter school has had its chance.
Mm-hmm. And then that's when the court action starts on both sides.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
you don't just go away.
I said that too quickly.
Right. You don't just go away.
No, the revocation process, if I may clarify, revocation process has its own appeal process. It goes to the state board. There's a whole administrative procedure. There'd have to be something egregiously wrong for
you. And then in the meantime, you continue to operate.
Not necessarily.
Yeah.
There's provisions in the
law. Okay.
There's provisions in the law that could cut off the school's funding if they're revoked for financial management purposes or violating any part of the law. Any part of the law.
But if we don't get any, we'll get a copy of it, of your financial reports.
Right.
And your annual reports. And
right.
And then time from our staff will be devoted to checking it to make sure it was done correctly.
And that's the part of that's why you get paid a 1% oversight fee.
A whole 1%?
Yeah. That's that $3,000.
Cool. Okay.
But the charter school's budget isn't $3,000. I don't know where you got that figure from.
No, it is not. I arbitrarily said it was $3,000. You know, I don't know what your overall budget is.
But that's the requirement of law, is a 1% fee. That's what the state gets paid for overseeing the charter schools and the state board.
It's about $5,000 to $6,000.
Pardon me?
It's about $5,000 to $6,000.
About a 20th of a person. Okay.
So that's why I laid out the minimum responsibilities for the chartering authority. You have those basic responsibilities to perform, and it's up to your board policy, your superintendent staff, to determine how those responsibilities are carried out.
Okay.
And that's what the 1% oversight fee is for. I wanted to review with you also really quickly the reasons for revoking a charter. And as I mentioned before, it's failing to meet generally accepted accounting principles, or the charter school is engaged in fiscal mismanagement. Failed to meet or pursue any of the pupil outcomes identified in the charter. The charter has committed a material violation of any of the conditions, standards, or procedures set forth in the charter. So everything set forth in the charter document in front of you, the charter school is committed to. It's a contract. And finally, violating any provision of law. One last point is your power over the charter is every 5 years, the charter is up for renewal.
Mm-hmm.
So at that time, you get to reevaluate the entire charter document again, review the charter's performance over the past 5 years, and determine whether or not you're going to grant that charter for another 5 years. So unlike every other district school that you have under your authority, you get to review the performance, review the fiscal, review everything that that charter has done over those past 5 years, and determine whether or not they get to have another 5 years to serve those kids.
And if we didn't renew the charter after 5 years, then you could, of course, appeal that. There's an appeal process. And you could wind up going to the SBE, and they will approve your charter.
Sure.
And now, you work for the company that puts these together, correct?
We assist in developing charters, sure.
Okay. Do many of the charters end up with the SBE?
Actually, I used to work for the State Board, reviewing charters and doing the authorizing responsibility. They currently authorize about, I don't have the exact numbers, it's around 30 schools that the State Board oversees.
A year? Yeah.
That's their entire portfolio of schools, yeah.
What, since you used to work there, what was the percentage of charters that were denied at the state level?
I don't have that. I could get that information for you, though.
You had a guesstimate?
No, but the reason why it's difficult to compare numbers is that the board changes over, you know, when there's a new governor.
Right.
Almost an entirely new board came in January. It's brand new in the year. They've only seen one new charter petition come before them. That was last week, and they approved it over the recommendations of staff to deny. It's hard to guess. They're a board, just like you. We don't know how you're going to vote.
So they approved it over the board's recommendation to deny?
Over the CDE staff recommendation to deny.
Really? Yeah, my understanding is they approve everything.
That's a fair statement, I think, but more applicable to the old board that was up. I think they had that reputation. I think that's completely fair to say.
Okay.
This new board, it has been a guessing game. And we only have one charter renewal that they granted from a school that they've overseen for 8 years.
Okay.
Almost 10 years. That happened in March. And like I said, last week they approved a school, a brand new charter petition that came up on appeal from Contra Costa County.
And so they do 30 schools statewide?
Yes.
Okay.
And just to remind you, you still are the sponsoring the LEA if that happens. If the charter school went up on appeal, state board becomes...
And then we get it anyway.
If you want to look at the fiscal hit, yes.
Who has oversight if the state board approves?
The state board has oversight, so you lose the control over your local school then, and how any negotiations you want to make with the school, any kind of MOUs you want to, like special ed will be worked out if you choose to approve the school. Special ed will be worked out in a separate MOU. You will go over every single little detail that you're concerned about. It'll be laid out in MOU with the school. So you lose that power then. It goes up to the state board.
Okay.
But we still supply special ed, it gets appealed to the state and the state oversees the charter.
Yeah.
It's not the state special ed.
The state doesn't have a special ed.
Right, that's what I'm saying. We still supply, but they figure out.
You're not required to. The school can negotiate with your county to provide special ed services. Or the charters also have an option to choose a SELPA their choice.
Okay.
So they can go outside and choose a regional SELPA.
When you contract with a third party, more of a technical question, all school districts in the state of California are required to use SACS, the standard account coding system. What do you use as a third party? Does it interface with that?
Yeah.
Typically, do the third party companies use SACS?
Well, charter schools use the generally accepted accounting principles. They have their finances look pretty different. It's not the same.
They don't use
facts,
right?
They have to use facts for certain reporting. I'm not a fiscal expert. I'll leave that on the table. They have to use facts for certain categories, is my understanding. We can get that clarification for you, but it's all according to state procedures and law.
Jump in and ask
some
questions.
Anyway, thank you for your time, and if you have any other questions, I'd be happy to address them.
Okay. So I've narrowed my 35,000 questions down to 4 that I'm going to ask.
Good job.
So the first question I wanted to ask, Denisha actually touched on the idea of collaboration. And for me, one of the things that is a worry is the idea of splitting our district, the idea of our little tiny community becoming further separated. And so I was wondering if anyone who's on the board wanted to speak to opportunities for collaboration. And just to, before I get about that, one of the things I've been most excited about the current administration is that they're trying to find ways to bring the kids together for opportunities. Rachel's Challenge recently, they brought all the sixth graders together. They're looking at, in some ways, having some curriculum that's the same for the kids or things that our kids from Mariposa County know. And so I think it's a two-way street, I'm hoping, if this comes to be, you know, comes into habit. And so I want to know what you think about collaboration with our district.
So we touched on this a lot, I think, in the public comments. There were a lot of people who went up and talked about enhancing professional learning communities for the teachers. And this would be done in a number of ways, with all the grant opportunities, with the UC Merced staff. They write grants that include educational outreach components, and that would bring in guest lecturers, special projects, special field trips, equipment that could be shared. It wouldn't be just for us. It would be for the district as a whole. They would make a point of writing into the grant district-wide, wherever possible.
So that's exciting.
That's huge. Yeah. And as Jeff Gilger pointed out, he's leading up this incredible group of university scholars who have done all this research on how learning best occurs. Mm-hmm. And those people are available and would come in and give guest lectures occasionally. They would be available to look at curriculum and help. Mm-hmm. And that would be available for the whole district.
The position you're sitting in right now is very enviable for mine, and I'm sure other people's position. You get to start from nothing and go, what do we want to create, you know, and wouldn't that be so exciting if we could have that same, you know, it's a little bit harder for us. So I want to think about, as we're opening the door to the UC, about our whole county benefiting from that.
Absolutely. Well, I have more.
Good.
We're higher ed focused, so we would work with UC Merced Center for Education Partnerships. And they provide all of these resources. They've got trainings for parents to help get parents help the parents get the kids excited about going on to higher ed. And, you know, they have lectures and things that would be available as well. And then with the students, we would certainly welcome students to come on field trips to our school or other things that are happening, other events. We're going to be actively pursuing after-school and summer programs that would be funded separately from the charter. We'd be looking into grant opportunities and tuition, and these would be very enriching programs so that they don't lose the summer, what's it called, summer burnout?
Something like that,
whatever,
yeah.
That they lose half of what they've learned during the school year.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that would be available, you know, homeschool, anyone who wanted to participate in it.
And I'd like to add, too, I mean, we're very interested in hearing your ideas of how we can collaborate.
Yeah.
Obviously, we don't talk about collaboration just one side in a room.
Right. I guess my only thinking is that I'd love to see a connection between the schools so that when there were district-wide in our district, it would be great if this is part of our county, if your kids came to district-wide opportunities.
Well, yeah, the movie that was for all sixth graders, I mean, we would want to be invited to that.
Yeah.
Or if there are school performances, we would want to know about them and band or whatever performances, we would want to be invited to those things.
My next...
Oh, could I comment on that also? That's why we're here. I mean, all those people standing out on a winter's night, we're here because we want to work with you.
Well, I think, absolutely.
I'd also like to add one thing about the granting opportunities, because you could ask, well, what's your incentive for us
What's our incentive to go and write grants that would involve NCUSD as a partner? And the answer is that, for instance, we're scientists. You know, many of us are involved here as scientists. So we apply to the National Science Foundation, and every single proposal we write is evaluated on two criteria: intellectual merit and what's called broader impact. And broader impact is about spreading educational benefits to the community of where the science is taking place. Our broader impact is magnified incredibly if we do it with you as a partner than if we're just benefiting Sierra Foothill Charter School with its much smaller total student base. So any benefit that we provide in anything we're proposing to do in this grant is going to be evaluated more favorably, and it must be evaluated on that criterion. Every single application that we write to National Science Foundation in terms of that broader impact.
Okay. They're going to cut me off if I don't go to my next question. So growth, right now you're proposing through age 14 or through 8th grade. What are your plans for growth?
Well, the charter petition is written for K-8, and it's a 5-year plan. So that's what we are planning for 5 years. Our numbers projections, I think, go up to 120. Mm-hmm. So 120 for those.
So you're not currently even planning on extending into a high school curriculum?
You know, that's like the dream. If this all goes so wonderfully well and we've got families moving, you know, and everything's growing and the district's numbers, enrollment is growing district-wide, and we could expand the next, you know, 5 years when we present again.
Yeah.
Asking then.
One of the things I see as a benefit is if you don't expand into high school, because then you're feeding our district.
Right.
If you're pulling people from the UC and you don't choose to expand into a high school, then I can see actually money coming back into our district. I know people don't want to hear about money, but... so if you stay as a K-8, you know, those collaborations and working together and shooting for a collaborative high school where both our districts come together, I think that... You know, that becomes more appealing to me.
So your vision of 120 students in the long run is basically in the Cathays Valley area?
120 students coming from the Cathays Valley
area? No, is your expansion of 120 students that you envision down the road only in the Cathays Valley area? I'm from District 2. I'm on the north side of the county. I don't see how this helps me at all. What's this politically for me?
It's a model you can emulate.
You're also in Maricopa County. You're an educator, right? Educating children.
Well, I only get political with you now. Okay.
Well, I think this charter school would be open to all the kids from the entire county.
If they can get themselves there.
Yeah, correct.
From Greeley Hill.
Yeah, correct. But they would have to come here to MES anyway. So.
No, we go to Lake Don Pedro.
Yeah, but they have the option available to them.
I just want to know. Excuse me, I'll tell you my reason for this question. I hear rumors of satellites of this school.
Really?
Northside satellite. I hear satellite up in the park. I hear about a satellite over here.
I've never heard of that.
No?
That's a cool idea.
Yeah.
I think we need one in Greeley Hill.
You'd have to write a charter. You'd have to modify your charter to do that, right?
I have to. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We have to add any additional facility.
What's that?
So no satellites for 5 years.
No one has
it's the first I've ever heard of it.
Yeah, no one has approached us about it.
Well, you know, being a board member, you get phone calls. Some people stop you at the little market and talk to you.
Yeah. But, you know, I think the benefit to you and having 120 kids at Cathays Valley is that means that there's more houses in Cathays Valley, so property value is higher. Your funding comes from property taxes, so that's your benefit. You get more people into the county, there's more money to spread throughout the
county. I'm asking a question.
My number three question.
Okay, you're about done, sweet pea.
I got you. So, talking about school setup, and one of the things we've heard is that the school has to be turnkey. But I was thinking if I were setting up the school, I would want to put new things in it. So what are you expecting the district to set up that school building with desks and computers and all of that stuff? Or are you planning to...
There are requirements under Prop 39 for furnishings and material, all that stuff. I would really like to provide you additional information for the district's obligations under Prop 39, if we can do that after this meeting.
Okay, let me go.
I'm not a Prop 39 expert, and I really feel uncomfortable addressing that.
Moving on to my last question, which is one of the things that we heard from Marcy, I don't know if she's still here, but she mentioned about us losing homeschoolers. And I think that our high school is doing a great job of integrating homeschoolers. Kids can come and go. They can come and take a math class and then go home and be homeschooled the rest of the day. We haven't really extended that to the junior high, and we haven't extended that to the elementary schools. So thinking about improving our attendance in our district for Sierra Homeschool, do you see any opportunities for partnering with our district and allowing kids to audit, I don't know if you use the word audit, attend math classes or art classes?
The way that the curriculum is set up, it's very integrated, so it would be hard to just attend a math class.
Mm-hmm.
We could offer enrichment opportunities, music, language, arts, those sorts of things. Certainly we would be happy.
So there are some opportunities for that.
Sure. And like we were talking about with the after-school program and the summer school program, that would be certainly open to everyone as well.
And I did talk to the homeschoolers a little bit, too, and one of the things they're interested in is socialization opportunities, and certainly the after-school and summer programs would be very useful for them in that regard.
Okay, I'm done.
Nada? All right. I've got seven pages here. We'll just start. Okay, the third description of criteria is method for assessing pupil progress. Okay, you talk about day and week long projects, which I think is wonderful, hands on. And I know since you are math and science based, how are you going to ensure that the language arts and history are incorporated in that? That's the first part of the question. The second part of the question is how are you going to assess that? And the third part is that going to meet standards?
Everything will meet standards and will exceed standards.
How will you determine that?
Curriculum, people can answer the rest of your question.
Okay.
So as you know, standards include not just math and science,
right,
but also
social. Language arts and
history. So we've identified options for curricula in those areas too. Our projects are not going to be just focused around science, but also around history and social sciences. So it'll all be there.
And how will you assess those?
We're going to use the full range of assessments, you know, the standard assessments and teacher rubrics, and in the same way, really, that we assess everything else.
And you talk about a standards-based report card. What standards will you identify to be placed on that standards-based report card? Do you have any idea?
Probably the California State Standards or the Common Core when it's adopted.
That overlap each other and that they'll all be on that, you think?
Well, we would start with the California standards, then we would probably move to the Common Core when it's adopted.
Okay. And then I'll be quiet. Oh, textbooks. I talk about textbooks. You say in the middle school that there's opportunity for exploration outside of the textbooks, but I don't see textbooks listed anywhere. How are we going to deal with that?
Right, so we have identified curricula, but we don't want to be too specific about textbooks before we bring in our teachers, because we think that the teachers working in the school, they're really going to have a stake in how the school is run, and we have to allow them to be professional and use their judgment to give input into how tailoring the curriculum. So it's going to be really important to get their input before we make final decisions on textbooks.
So based upon your personnel, then they will determine the textbooks?
They would not determine, but they would give input. We need that input. We think it's really important that they are involved in those decisions.
Okay, one more, and then I'll quit. Are you going to be using the visual arts and art and music and physical education standards when you approach those subjects?
Yeah.
And how will you ensure that they are?
In the same way that we...
Well, we would use the physical education test, the regular California PE
test.
I'm not sure what grade level it's administered in. Fourth, maybe?
Fourth, seven.
Mm-hmm. The the music program will probably be the ORF. What's the other part of the name?
The ORF.
It's the ORF music program. I'm not familiar with
very
it.
Successful.
Is that Pam? Is that Pam's program?
It's the same program they have in El Portal.
Okay. It's called ORF Schulwerk.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
It's after Carl ORF.
Right. Got it. Okay. Thank you.
you know, I hear a lot of, maybe a silly question, but I hear a lot of positive, good things about the school, what it can do for the community. What are the negatives? What will it, are there any negatives to the school? What could cause it to fail? I mean, what are the pros and cons? What's the con? Give me some cons. All I hear is good. There's got to be some. I mean, have you identified how can the school fail? I mean, there can't be all positives. I mean, it's got
to
be.
We do have to work with the county school board. We need your support.
That's a con.
Negative?
Wow. So should we vote right now?
Wow.
Okay, I make a motion.
I say the ways that charter schools typically get into trouble are like financial difficulties, so they are not able to enroll enough students, and therefore their budget falls apart. It doesn't seem like that's the case because they've gotten signatures to demonstrate the interest. So, or financial mismanagement, they just don't do a good job. I would say I don't know how the school run it, but the fact that they set aside 4% for business manager means that they'll get a really competent charter school's business manager. And then just working with some of the members of the board on developing the financial plan, I would say I'd say that this team came in just about highest on the learning curve of compared to almost any group that I've worked with. They already, when they came to me, had the basics of charter school financing down, which is pretty rare. Usually I'm educating my clients as I go about how charter school financing works. And they've been, like, very close. I mean, there's been some questions, but they've really made an effort to get informed and be very, very on top of the details. So to me, that really bodes well for how they will manage the school as a board.
Okay. And our board is working with the district as a plus. We want to work with you.
So that would be a negative if we weren't able to do that.
Very good.
I'll prefer to school fail because they have, you know, in this school's case, they have a really complex instructional vision that will take a sophisticated staff to pull off and do it well. So if they did not put a lot aside time and money for professional development, I would count on them struggling a lot until they got that instructional vision down. They set aside 1 month for professional development and planning of teachers. So that, I think, is a really good amount of time to get people trained in methods to develop curriculum and go into it. Yeah. Most likely, they will still go through a process of several years to really get things down. Most charter schools take the full 5 years to really get into their groove, but that's just, you know, what it takes. So that doesn't mean they're failing. I think they fail when they just go in blind and don't really train people and expect it all to happen, and then it's chaos. And, you know, they budgeted for it, so I don't think that will happen. They need to select a good leader, you know, hire good people.
Yeah, I just wanted to add a brief comment on that, you know, failing possibility is that I think one way we started that charter school was to look at what was our dream and what we could realistically make successful. And I'm making this comment because it's related to the K-8 program. When we all started, we actually, most of us wanted also high school. And some of us started talking with educators and teachers involved in all kinds of charter schools across the nation. And we realized that actually what was working very well in most cases was a program that was approaching K to 8, you know, classes. But that when it came to high school, you know, it was very difficult to find a program that was successful almost every time. So what we said was, okay, well, let's try to start with what we think is going to be successful, because we have the power and the capacities to implement it. And then let's put aside what we think might be potential cost for, you know, difficulties. And so I think the reason why it's very difficult for us to give cons is that I think we put them aside so that actually we could bring to you the strongest proposal possible.
They could fail because they just do something really stupid and they have legal liability, and that drowns them financially.
Sure.
You know, they need to be well run and aware of the laws, just like any, you know, it's the same thing with a school district.
Sure.
Okay, I think I'm done with the major reasons.
What I was speaking, they kind of talked about was the wage and benefit package would be on that, and so, I mean, I would think that one of the concerns would be, because you have to hire credentialed teachers to be in the core academics, that there would be high turnover at the school there, because if, you know, if there's going to be an opportunity to work at a traditional district that's going to pay better and have a better benefit package, you know, that's typically what happens with charter schools, is that you have a lot of turnover, and that causes the failure, because there isn't that consistency that takes place, and the curriculum isn't able to flourish because of that. So I would just see that at 45,000 is, I think you said, is the average salary, and 525 for benefits is going to be low in the teaching profession.
Yeah, I would say, that in my experience, if the school is well run, the teachers who go there will want to stay there because they came there for a vision.
Mm-hmm.
They're excited about it. They bought in. It's something they don't have. That's the whole finding new professional development opportunities,
yeah.
Special opportunities for staff. It's really exciting, like you said, to be like building a vision the ground up. So most people stay if it's well run. Not well run, that's why people want to leave. Now we have a surplus and people want jobs. So it's, you know, unfortunately, there are a lot of teachers wanting jobs. So my experience is not so much of the turnover in well-run schools.
And I think that's the first part of the answer. The second is, you know, the success of any organization is really hiring good people. And this is our best budget based on the information we have, and we're being conservative every step of the way. And, you know, there's going to be differences in the budget when we actually get to operation, and I can assure you that putting money towards the teachers is going to be, you know, a high priority, because that's how you can...
I think the teachers that come to you to be interviewed are going to believe in your vision, believe in your dream of your school, you know, and can I, you know, keep body and soul together and be part of this grand experiment? That's the type of people I think you're going to get.
And you have to warn them that it's going to be an incredible amount of work.
Yeah.
You shouldn't come there unless they're up for that, because that's why some people will leave, is because
sure.
They're not really up for that. So you have to tell them in advance.
Yeah.
You can do that.
And on your charter, how much say do we have on what our requirements would be? As far as, I've noticed there's a lot of, I've read the charter, and I mean, personally for me, I was actually offended by reading the first 100 pages or whatever about the community, about how the school doesn't provide the education. I mean, if I was to approve this, I would want all that omitted. It doesn't need to be in the charter. Is that something that I could request to be omitted from the charter?
Sure.
Okay.
I think I'd like to comment on what you just said. I think that for the most part, everybody was pretty respectful in their comments about the fact that this is a different type of education and not a superior type of education. And I just wanted to say I really want to thank you for that, because this is something where you want to make sure everybody's partners. So.
Yes.
I want to say, I think we were instructed when we wrote the charter petition to really focus on the state.
Yeah.
So a lot of that stuff is in there in case we had to go to the state. A better case for the state, so...
Yeah. And we can't really change the charter for the state after we've submitted it to you.
That's the audience document.
Yeah.
And specifically that it's really not so much putting down, it's not at all about putting down the district. It's simply one of the requirements of evaluation of the charter and demonstrating
the need
and how it's different.
Yeah. Well, I guess it really just bothered me, you know, the fact that, you know, these are minor things, but stating in in the document that kids will be on the buses for an hour and a half, 3 hours. It's a 15-minute drive from Mariposa to Cantes Valley. So.
That data is from the MCUSD's website on what it would take to get a child from Hornitos to the school district and to back.
What does it take to get a child from Hornitos to Cactus Valley? I mean, we're talking.
It depends on.
So that's where. I mean, that's
15, 20 minutes.
The 15, yeah. So. A lot of that stuff, I guess I didn't care for. So, but that's my opinion.
It just depends on if you're the first one or the last one to get on the bus when you're leaving Cactus Valley.
Yeah. Well, that's really your schedule.
Right. To clarify, you don't have to live in Cactus Valley to be on the bus. My own children only live, if I drive them to school, we live 15 minutes away. If they ride the bus, it's an hour and a half. It's the routes. It's the pickups. We're geographically diverse. We're spread over the entire county. It's just the nature of the beast.
And that kids are an
it's nothing good or bad. It's a reality.
We're not about putting down the district.
Well, I was hoping not. But like I say, when I read it, I mean, the first couple of pages, it's just offensive. It's like, so.
And, you know, not everyone has a vehicle mm-hmm. that can go to Mariposa twice a day.
Right.
And not everyone has the time to do that. And
or the
money. I mean, part of what we really want to do is serve the most needy proportion, the most needy portion of the Cactus Valley community, which has very high needs. And, you know, not everyone has a license. Not everyone has a reliable vehicle.
I just want to add that, you know, and I probably feel the same, that we're sorry if this offense is not our intention. It just has to do with demonstrating the need should we have to go to this thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of us can feel the same way as I do. I mean, we're really happy with MES right now. It's working. Mm-hmm. It's just... not working with our community families.
It's insane what we have to do to manage our kid getting up and back and out, everything. We work down in Merced. So it's just logistically, it's crazy. And a lot of favors.
I did. And that's how it is in rural communities.
Yeah.
It's a long ways to haul.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm glad you brought up your feelings, though. I think that's an important step here in this whole process.
Thank you.
I just have a few. Currently, how are you guys funded right now? Is that
volunteer donations?
Is that
yeah. Donations from the founders and the community.
Okay. And then also, if you don't meet the ADADA from the district students for the Prop 39, how is the site funded again? Or I'm not really
can
clear.
Can I just tell you the 101 signatures that we got mm-hmm. for intent to enroll forms?
Mm-hmm.
All of those are Mariposa County.
In district.
In district, yeah. So, and we budgeted for 87,
mm-hmm.
so we have well over what we...
What you anticipate, but if not, I'm just wondering what happens if not.
Jill, wasn't there one or two from Chorus Gold or something? I think... Maybe.
Not that I'm aware of. I looked at everyone very quickly.
Well, it doesn't matter because it'd be 1% or less.
Yeah. Hypothetically, if not, I mean, they'd be like any outside, you know, private vendor saying, hey, can we use...
So they would negotiate
a facility use agreement.
Okay.
Like any kind of lease with, you know, a church or anyone you would lease out a property to.
If they weren't, if they didn't have the intent to enroll and it was under 80... The process would be we would negotiate some kind of rental fee.
Okay. And then also, if there's any kind of change in the curriculum, like your math and science based right now, what happens like if, you know, which I don't foresee, but you don't meet the standards, does that come back to us again and then we have to reevaluate you? Or I mean, I just don't know if, like, what we're held to in that realm.
We can't not meet standards. We must... For a state school.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying, like, would you have to reform your curriculum again?
So
would that come back to us?
If we did a major change in our mm-hmm. curriculum, we would have to come back to the board and ask for permission to change that piece of our
Okay. And if you do, like, fall into program improvement or something, which, like I said, I don't foresee, but do we get penalized, or is that just you guys because you are your own school now?
Is that the latter?
Okay.
They're their own district.
Yeah. Okay. I was just wondering.
There are charters that are in PI, but they're responsible through the Fed to follow all the program improvement guidelines and funding, etc.
Anybody have any other questions? Okay. I have one more. Can you speak to transportation and lunches? That's been something everyone keeps asking me about.
Yes.
Kirstie, what was that? I'm sorry. Transportation and lunches.
Okay.
For transportation, as part of the public charter school grant program, we can apply for transportation funds. We did not put that in, promise it or put it in the petition, because the petition is a legally binding document and didn't promise that. Mm-hmm. But we are going to apply for that, and that would get us the chance. And it can be, you could contract with the school district for busing, and that would be for the first 2 or 3 years, and that would give us time to figure out bigger plans. If for some reason that did not come through, then we would organize vanpools and carpools, and we, for safety reasons, we would have everyone who's driving in those go through the same procedures that they do as if they're going on a field trip with the school district. They go to the DMV and get the printout, and they use full volunteer with the fingerprints and DOJ tech and all of that.
Yeah. Would you buy vans, rent vans, lease vans?
We would use our own.
Oh, your own. Got it. And then lunches?
Lunches, again, is not something that we're required to provide, so we did not put that in the petition as something that we would do, but it's something that we are definitely investigating. Mm-hmm. We've been talking to an expert third party who sets schools up through the, what is the food program? The California Department of Education school lunch program. I can't remember the exact name of it, but they would help us with all the paperwork and all of that. And we have been informed that charter schools can provide lunches at those at the rates that the state reimburses. It's possible to have a program that works. So that's something we're investigating.
And the only thing I heard here that I hope isn't true, and it didn't seem like it was true from what I read, is that a kid living next to the school isn't going to be rejected from the school, are they? That was one of the people who spoke, a third person, said people can come into the school, but a kid living next door to the school get rejected. That will never happen.
Was he maybe saying about the application process? Mm-hmm. Would it be the application would be first only district, and then it would go out of district? I think that's what I'm assuming.
I think somehow he thought the idea that perhaps kids living in Cathays Valley would not be allowed to attend the charter school.
If they filled up and mm-hmm. they had to have a lottery, there's a chance that child's name might not get drawn because they didn't have room for that.
I think that's what he was referring to.
But you would expand rather than let that happen, probably, right?
Well,
there's additional room at the CVE site. And in general, all of the budgeting numbers get better as you add additional students.
Sure.
But again, we're sort of conservative. So we weren't.
Okay, just wanted to throw that out.
It'll be a while before we would have to.
Anyone?
Our own kids.
Our own kids.
That would be a bummer. Did you do the lottery?
That'd be fun sitting on that board.
There was a. Lisa was talking about the grain to the district and all of that. And I just wanted to point out that there's also a cost of doing nothing, and that the cost is that not only are more families not going to come in, but more families are going to move out, and that is going to be a financial drain to the district as well. So, why not try it? Why not give it a try? I kept hearing innovation is needed, and I just so strongly agree with that. You gotta try something new and get people
In. Come back.
Jill, if I could just make a comment. I don't often say things personally. I'm a former teacher of the year for the state of California. I never had any intention on becoming a superintendent. I loved teaching, and I did it for many, many years. When I was asked to do this, I never would have believed in my wildest imagination. I'd close schools, I'd reduce classrooms, I'd raise class size to 38. And I know people don't like to hear anything about funding. The problem's at the state level. It's a travesty what's happening to our public school system. It's not between us in this room. Never has been. Your ideas are wonderful. I laud you. The board's scared to death we're going to lose our district. We're on the verge of bankruptcy. That's fact. And we can ignore it, and we can try to innovate our way out of it, but they have reason to be very, very desperately concerned about saving that district. So as they talk to you and share ideas, I don't want anybody in this room to think that they don't believe your idea has merit, because that's not what it is at all. And if you hear fear, if you hear trepidation, it's because for the last 2 years, we've pulled every trick out of the bag to save this district from going down into conservatorship. And so it's a fact of life. We don't feel sorry for ourselves. Mariposa County Unified is not the only district that's in financial trouble. But we do realize that we're on the precipice of disaster here. And if the governor does pull the second trigger, we're very, very concerned about how we stay solvent. I share that with you in all honesty. That's a fact.
Could I make just a little comment about one of the opportunities that where SFCS could be a useful partner in MCUSD financially is that, we were discussing this earlier, as a nonprofit corporation, we can potentially draw on other sources of funding.
Correct.
Not just with the granting, we have all we bring experience with to. But also in raising private donations, and
sure,
that some of the resources that we raise, I don't see any reason why those resources can't potentially benefit the district, you know, and as partners.
Well, you're a remarkably talented group and resourceful. You've demonstrated that, no question about it.
So I guess, where was this last year?
It didn't
exist.
We had a school last year.
We started in June, and we were hoping that it would remain.
Yeah.
Naively.
All this, when this closures came down, none of this was ever brought to us. It was save our school, not how can we...
Yeah, in January we heard that the school would never close.
We didn't know.
Well, we didn't know. I is the mother of invention.
We had no intention of starting a charter until June.
Yep.
And then most of us were gone over the summer, and then we were fishing in 2 months.
What was a disaster may be, in fact, a saving grace in the long run. You really have to set some store by that. You know, when you're in a dark place, look around for a way to move out of it. The state is bankrupting you. The state is being poorly managed. The state cannot meet its own criteria for evaluation.
True.
Any other questions? I'm done.
Oh, I'm so done.